Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host this week. My name is Chris Lockhart, and joining me is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kev?
Hey, everyone. Oh, geez, sorry. Yes, I still have that little bit of a cough from, was a week or two ago when we recorded last. I think I'm just an old man, and that's my new trademark winter cough.
Well, you just keep it to yourself there, buddy. I don't need that action in my life. And last but not least, we have Richard Reeder on the line. How's it going, Rich?
Good. And you guys?
So far, so good. 2020's been good. And, yeah, we are back a little bit earlier than I had originally said. You know, we weren't going to record for another couple weeks. But after we recorded our last episode, I went out and watched Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, and I had to talk about it. So anyway, I got Kevin and Rich here with me this evening, and we're going to go around the table. We're going to talk about the pros and the cons about the film, and then the pros and cons about the sequel trilogy as a whole. And then we're going to cap off the episode with us talking about the Disney Plus series, The Mandalorian. So, all right, let's go around the table. I'm going to ask you guys, before we just go into any details, just so we kind of know where we stand, what would you rate this movie out of 5? How many stars would you give this out of 5? For me, I give it 2.5 out of 5. So it's right in the middle. That's where I'm at. Kevin, what would you give it out of 5?
Oh, geez. I'm going to go a little higher than you. I'm going to say 3. Catchman, okay. Right mood, it could be 3.5. But right now, I'll say 3.
All right. And Mr. Reeder, out of 5, what would you give it?
I would give it 3 lightsabers out of possible 5.
Nice. Nice. I thought for sure you'd give it a 5 out of 5. But
well, you didn't have to see it with Mike.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. I should preface by saying that we haven't, like, pre-discussed what we're going to talk about. This is, you know, other than giving the, you know, the points for the episode, and we are going to rank the films as a whole. You know, we haven't really, you know, talked about whether we liked it or not, other than some initial stuff that we may have seen on each other's social media, but we haven't actually discussed it. So let's start with the pros with this movie. So let's go around the table and let's talk about the things that really worked for this film. Rich, what worked for you with Rise of Skywalker?
A lot of the small amount of comedy, actually. The little tiny jokes here and there, I found that nice to have. I found it a little more... it didn't feel as pandering with the comedic moments as the last couple did, to me, anyway. And, I mean, as always, I mean, the action is pretty cool overall. So, I mean, those are kind of two of the few things that you want out of a decent Star Wars movie or any action, actually any movie in general, really, these days. So I'd say that definitely worked for me.
Excellent. And I just have a note here that I was supposed to say before we discussed the episode. During the Christmas break, I found out that my Uncle Doug listened to our Mandela Effect episode. So we have Uncle Doug listening, perhaps. So hi, Uncle Doug. Yeah, we were talking about the Mandela Effect episode at our Christmas gathering. So I thought that was pretty cool. So, for me, the pros, I'm going to say Adam Driver, in my opinion, is actually the best new addition to Star Wars, I think. Kylo Ren is a great and complicated character. And I really felt he did the best with what he had to work with. Like, I really think they could have done more with him. But what he did in this film and the series as a whole is good, I think. Unfortunately, you know, we'll talk about later. I wish they would have gave him a little bit more to do than what he did. But I mean, what he did was great.
You're just lucky you didn't see him in Tidy Whiteys and Girls, because that's all I can picture when I watch the Star Wars movies now.
Oh, the whole shirtless thing in the last movie?
No. The show, the HBO series Girls, which is kind of this generation's Sex in the City. He's a weird, sexually frustrated, aggravated kind of asshole in that series, and he's always walking around with his dick out and his tighty whities, and it kind of ruins the Kylo Ren character. Okay. So he's like crying and stuff. I guess that was good practice.
Yeah, I did remember that he was in it, but I've never really watched. I think I watched like the first episode of that show, and that's about it. But I think it was good, and he's in a new movie with Scarlett Johansson called, I want to say it's called The Marriage.
Yes, my wife watched that, and she said it was very depressing because the whole movie's just about the breakup of a marriage or something.
It is depressing, definitely, but, I mean, the acting is amazing. Like, him and Scarlett Johansson do such a good job, and you really feel for them. But, like I said, prior to this, I remember he had been on The Girls, and I was like, whatever, you know, and I don't know. He grew on me as this movie series progressed, and I thought he was really good in this one. I liked the location shooting. One thing that used to really drive me nuts about the prequel trilogy prior to this was that it was all, for the most part, CGI worlds. And I mean, yes, you know, this is a space movie franchise, you know, they will go to alien planets, and the alien planets will not always look like Earth or parts of Earth. But I really appreciate location shooting. You know, like, I really felt the prequels, they relied too much on the CGI worlds. So I really liked the different locales they went to in this film. Daisy Ridley, I thought was good with what she had to work with, again. And with this film and with the previous sequel films, I like the not just the location shooting, but I love the practical special effects. They still use models for certain shots, especially with the Millennium Falcon. So I appreciate that. I really like that. You can totally tell when, you know, certain movies or certain series are complete CGI compared to ones that are not. And I do like practical special effects. Kev, what were the pros for this movie for you?
There was, I was a little surprised by how much I enjoyed it. And I think part of it is because I rewatched 7 and 8 leading up to it. So I finally had it all together. Mm-hmm. Movie pretty. There was so many poster, you know, want this blown up images in it. Mm-hmm. They were amazing. The fight in the water was incredible. So well done. Everyone looked badass in it. The shot of all of the Star Destroyers was just, oh my God, how are they going to win? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know they have to in the end, but how are they going to? We're going full spoiler, right?
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't even know how they won. I still can't remember what the hell they did. But anyway,
Lando doing his best Falcon impression on your left, mm-hmm. and showing
that was great.
The fleet. Oh my God, I went nuts for that moment. That was just so beautifully done.
Those are literally the words that came out of my mouth when that happened. So it's just like, hey, Mike, on your left. And he actually looked left.
I kind of think of the three, this had the most emotional moments in it. Because I was excited when the fleet showed up. Kylo had acting moments. Rey had acting moments where I'm like, that's just cool. Mm-hmm. Chewie crying.
Oh, Chewie crushed it.
Oh my gosh. And then there was so much symbolism in it that paid off. This, if this is truly the end of this story, you know, and I mean, we got the Obi-Wan series, Mandalorian season 2, whatever they do next for movies. But if this is it for Skywalker story, I'm satisfied. I'm okay.
Yep.
If that's the last time you touch on any of these guys, I'm good. I'm good with it. It's a complete story. I am happy with ending. Yes, there's stuff we can nitpick, and there's a few things I'm like, maybe one more edit, one more pass. Maybe if you kept that scene in and deleted this scene, said, yes, there's all that, you know, armchair quarterbacking stuff. But as it is, I'm happy. I'm happy and content with this being the end of a story. If this was a book and I closed it, I'd say, yes, I'm good. I'm happy. It's on the shelf. It's a keeper. I'm going to recommend it to other people.
With me, I'm not so much happy. Like I'm definitely not there. And, like, the thing with it, though, if it were a book, I think they would definitely give us more detail than they gave us in this film. Because there's so many things that I'm like,
oh, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Why did that happen? But we'll get into that. So let's get into that. Let's talk about the cons of this film. And I really thought about this. For me, Rise of Skywalker, it reminds me of what happened with Justice League. Like, Justice League was an all right movie, but it should have been, oh my god, amazing. And it just wasn't. Like, to me, Rise of Skywalker is more in the same group of Justice League than it is with Avengers Endgame. Like, Avengers Endgame, like, did such a good job capping off, you know, the 21 movies that came before it, right? And it tied in all this stuff, and it paid off in a big way. And I really think Rise of Skywalker could have been that. You know, wrapping up, you know, because there's 11 movies now total, so the 10 movies that preceded it. But unfortunately, I think the difference between Marvel and DC is that Marvel had Kevin Feige. They had a guy in charge who had a master plan. And unfortunately, I think with this trilogy of movies, they had no plan. They, other than, we're doing a trilogy, and then we'll make it up as we go.
Other than money.
And money.
We need money.
Yeah. So
George needs to retire.
Well, the thing is, they already paid him off. Like, they paid George Lucas $4 billion.
No, but what I'm saying is the first six movies, essentially,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Because you're saying the whole series is a whole.
No, I'm saying, right? I'm saying this sequel trilogy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry. Like, not the whole series. Like, to be honest with you, like, I know a lot of people shit on the prequels. I prefer the prequels to the sequel trilogy, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, well, that does it for this episode.
like now hear me out. The difference being...
We have to?
The difference being, George Lucas went into that prequel trilogy with a plan. Like, he knew, like, we're doing this, yeah, you know...
We're going to do it terrible. And this is what it's going to be.
Well, no. He did episode 1, he did episode 2, he did episode 3. He directed them all, he wrote them. You know, like, yes, there are a lot of problems. Don't get me wrong. Like, there are problems with the prequel trilogy. I'm not saying it's perfect. It is not perfect. But at least there was a plan in place, and at least it paid off in my opinion, in Revenge of the Sith. You know, like, I thought Revenge of the Sith... If you're going to compare this to Revenge of the Sith, I think Revenge of the Sith is a way better movie than this one. Because there's so much things that paid off in Revenge of the Sith that in this film it didn't really pay off. But they did, but they didn't. We'll get into the minutiae here. I have a whole list here. So do one of you guys want to start it off? Or do you just want me to...
You actually said something I want to spin off from. Because you mentioned Feige.
Yeah.
And I do think that is the best example. And I can throw out Stan Lee, Vince McMahon. Point being, you have all of these characters, and when you have one person in charge as the architect of the whole story, it flows together better. Not perfect, but it flows together better than if you have multiple players. And Marvel held it together, Stan Lee held it together, Vince McMahon, and no, not everything is perfect that they ever released.
No.
But there's an overall story here.
Yeah.
An overall vision. And you can tell the difference to in these three movies that that didn't happen. To continue the wrestling analogy, for a veteran wrestler, the way that you book a match, like Triple H and John Cena, two very well-known guys, you got a match tonight, John Cena, you're winning, go 20 minutes, figure it out. That's all that they get. So they need to figure out how to fill those 20 minutes. There's a lot of stuff in this trilogy that feels like, hey, we want to get from A to B, figure it out and fill 2 hours. Well, what are we going to do? I don't know. But by the end of the movie, we want this to happen. You figure out how to pad it. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. But what it does, and I think the worst, best, interesting, I don't quite know how to feel about it yet. It's going to take multiple viewings, is switching horses on two and then going back to your first one on three, or sorry, on eight, and then back on nine. We want to, you know, depending on how we want to number these, I guess. But it ends up in a Watchmen-esque way of, I didn't realize that I was watching deconstructionist Star Wars, but it is. Because it seemed like we got JJ, then Ryan said, let me take it all apart, and then JJ said, let me fix it. But Kylo Ren's mask being the best example, there's some meme a few years ago, and it pops up every so often, of a Japanese art that takes a broken vase and use this gold paint glue to fix it. So then the gold paint glue ends up being making it more beautiful, even though it's a crack and flawed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Kylo Ren's mask has this red.
Yep.
Oh, God, that bothered me.
Fix thing for it.
But that's actually what they're going for.
It's, Yeah. Hey, Ryan deconstructed it, and I'm going to pick up the toys after, and I don't have all the pieces, but I got enough.
And also another one was when, in this movie, when Rey threw the lightsaber, and then Ghost Luke comes walking out carrying it and hands it back to her and says, you don't treat something like a weapon like that. I can't remember what his line was, but basically it was, you don't treat this with disrespect.
It was don't do what Ryan did.
Yeah, but then the Ryan Johnson film, he throws it over his shoulder and walks away when he was still alive. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Did that not bother either of you guys that all of the Force powers were heightened so much more in this film that it just became straight up magic?
It was like
some Harry Potter fucking Voldemort shit.
It's on my list. It's ridiculous. Like the Force healing, like Baby Yoda doing it. Like I kind of get, because I mean we know Yoda's
race.
Yeah, Yoda's race was very powerful, right, with the Force. So for the Mandalorian, they kind of get a pass with me for that. But if
Force also healing, it's not a multi-million dollar movie.
Yeah, well, if
Force also healing, lesser it, injuries too.
Well, Rey brought Kylo Ren back from the dead.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yoda didn't bring anyone back from the dead.
Just for him to fucking die again.
Well, so yeah, and that's the thing. If Force healing's a thing, why didn't Obi-Wan do it with Qui-Gon? Obviously, I don't know. Anyway.
And not to mention the transferring of objects between them for the whole fucking movie. They're in completely different spots, and then they're transferring objects that don't disappear. Like, in the last movie, it kind of made sense because it was there and then it disappeared because it was a Force projection. So that made sense. Now they don't disappear and they're able to use it. That made zero fucking sense. And then now you have Star Wars ghosts fucking picking shit up in the real world.
Yeah.
You got Adam Driver channeling Harrison Ford when he pulls the lightsaber out and does that shrug which is Harrison Ford when he shoots a gun in any of the original trilogy. I was like, oh, wow, that was a good acting job there.
Yeah. But
the, so he sold what could have been ridiculous.
Yeah, like the whole
it actually still was ridiculous.
The to be honest, Rich, that didn't bother me as much in the fact that, you know, like they kind of established that Rey and Kylo have this connection. So I was like I'm not against them doing new things with the Force. Like last movie, like to be honest,
it's not healing.
Well, it's just the healing thing. Why wasn't it done? Like I said, why wasn't it done back before? Like, I mean, if that was always
a thing. But then why wouldn't they have done any of those other things before?
But the whole, the transporting, them being in two different places at once, they kind of established last movie that there's this connection, that these two were.
But then why wouldn't that also do the same thing for the healing? Because there's a connection, you know?
Well,
she's transferring a little bit of her Force life into him. Well, she's forcing her life into him.
Pulling people or pulling objects from one place to another is a little different than bringing someone back from the dead.
I would say it's worse. Bringing someone back from the dead, to me, with the Force, makes more sense than pulling an object halfway across the fucking galaxy.
Well, no.
Because you can touch them and you can transfer your Force energy, which exists in everyone, which makes sense as a life Force energy, and you can transfer that because you're touching them, you're there. But transferring something halfway across the galaxy, fuck, even Star Trek couldn't do that.
Well, they did with J.J. Abrams, though. They did in the yeah. They did.
Okay, so now we see the problem. It's J.J. Abrams.
They did it in, well, no, because Rian Johnson introduced it in the last movie. Like, he totally did it. Like, where
the transferring of stuff?
Yeah, because remember Rey got, like, wet? Kylo got wet because one of them got wet because they're getting rained on. One of them was getting rained on.
I'm pretty sure it was Rey that got wet when she saw Kylo.
Nice.
I'm not a fan of it either, but to me that the whole bringing people back from the dead, that to me that's con blood. Again, a J.J. Abrams thing. You know, just give someone con blood and guess what? They're magically healed, back from the dead. But, okay, so the connection between them. Okay, this is another problem I had. So, in The Last Jedi, Snoke told Rey and Kylo he was the one who was the connection between them, right? You know, when they had their big showdown, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But in this film, the Emperor, who says he was actually Snoke the whole time, every voice you hear, that was me, was seemingly surprised by their Force connection. So, what the
fuck?
Even
though he created it, supposedly.
Well, yeah, like, if he was Snoke, then how did he not know? Like, as soon as I seen, like, oh, man, that pissed me off big time.
You know why? I have the solution, and it's two letters. JJ.
Yeah. Well,
and it was like you saying the Emperor had been gaslighting them the first two movies.
Well, remember a few podcasts ago, Kevin, when I said this is going to be like the Blofeld reveal? You know, where he's like, I was the one behind everything in the previous three movies that you were in. And it's like, but those villains all had different agendas. You know, like they were in no way connected. Like, what the fuck? But I do want to kind of go back and to the Kevin Feige thing. Star Wars has a Kevin Feige. Her name's Kathleen Kennedy. She's the one that's in charge of these films. She's the one that
they're supposed to have her.
Well, she's the one that is in charge of the five films that Disney has done in the Star Wars universe.
Obviously fucking failed.
There was no plan for this trilogy. Plus, she didn't take advantage of the two Solo movies, Solo being one of them, and Rogue One, to help build up the mythology a little bit. What I mean is, like, Kevin Feige, for example, introduced the idea of the quantum realm in the Ant-Man movie series, which later paid off in Avengers Endgame, right? You know, he'll introduce these little things in all these other movies to pay off big time later. So, you know, the force transporting thing, the force healing, could have been, you know, there could have been some groundwork laid prior to this film to make it be like, oh, yeah, because honestly, I think that's why they released the second last episode of The Mandalorian before Rise of Skywalker, because that was the episode where Baby Yoda heals Carl Weathers' character. So in a way, they established that this was a possibility prior to this movie, which I don't think really worked. But anyway, getting back to Snoke, man, what a waste of potential, man.
Isn't that what we do? You know, Darth Maul.
Well, at least they brought him back, and you know, like, I know you have to watch Rebels and the Clone Wars, but he is pretty cool in those. But Snoke, like the Force Awakens, I really like that they introduced this new villain. I really like that he was played by Andy Serkis. I thought that was pretty cool. And that we didn't know anything about him, because in The Force Awakens, you see him as this big giant hologram, you know, very similar to what the Emperor used to use when he talked to Vader. But then there was all these theories between The Force Awakens and Last Jedi, like, who was this guy? Where'd he come from? And there were, you know, there's a couple fan theories, that one, that he was actually a giant, and the hologram was actually showing what his true size. Then there was the theory that he was actually a little person, like Yoda, but very powerful. So I was like, oh my god, I can't wait to see him. And then when we finally see him in person in The Last Jedi, I was like, oh, okay, he's just a normal, lanky dude that's, you know, obviously been beaten up with the ugly stick, but, you know, whatever, I mean, it works. And the concept behind him, because there was, I think, in the Star Wars Visual Dictionary, the one they released prior to The Last Jedi, they have Snoke in it, and Snoke is listed as being neither a Jedi or a Sith. He's just a Force-using dude that uses the Force for his own will. And I thought that was such a cool concept, that he's neither a Jedi or a Sith. He studied the Jedi, studied the Sith, and is a Force user, and kind of does his own thing. I really thought that was cool. And then, yeah, Rian Johnson cuts him in half, which, whatever, like, I would have been okay with that, because, I mean, you know, basically, that was the moment when I thought Kylo Ren said, you know, hey, I'm going to the dark side now. Sorry, Rey. You know, peace out. I'm going to go kill some people. So now he becomes the Supreme Leader. So this movie should have been like him being the bad guy. You didn't need the Emperor. It should have been Kylo Ren being the bad guy in this movie.
Yep.
But, again, no plan for the trilogy. Okay, so anytime you guys want to jump in, just jump in. Who's Rey's parents? When did when did Palpatine, you know, get some Putang? Like, well, when did that happen?
You know what, though? I actually, like, as much as I was kind of upset in a sense, I was relieved that she didn't turn out to be a Skywalker, because that's what everybody has been saying for the past X amount of years, yeah. Right? So the fact that she didn't end up being a Skywalker was really relieving. Then she was a Palpatine, and, like, when they said that, I was like, oh, that's so stupid. But then, like, I don't know. Like, I don't want to say it made sense, but it was definitely the lesser of the evils that that we could have gotten. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think... Because, I mean, if you just had her be a Skywalker, that would have been fucking stupid, possibly incestuous. If you'd had her be an absolute nobody, that would have been just kind of a letdown, yeah. Right? So she had to be somebody.
Which kind of so was a letdown. Like, well, like in the Last Jedi, to me, that was a letdown when Kylo's like, yeah, you're nobody. Your parents were nobody.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I'm like... You know, and I know that that was the message that Rian Johnson was trying to make, was that, you know, anyone can be a hero, anyone can be a Jedi, like, because there's that kid at the end who, you know, uses the Force to bring the broom to his hand as he's looking to the stars, and he's got the Rebel, you know, pin on his jacket.
Oh, shit, he brought... What? I didn't notice that he used the Force to bring that to him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's subtle, but it's there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, cool. I really, like, when I saw that, the only thing I got out of it was the shadow... looking kind of like he was holding a lightsaber. That's what I got out of that. But
which again was the symbolism that anybody can be a Jedi. Anyone can be a hero.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's totally what I got. I just missed the Force part. That's crazy.
Which is cool. Like, but at the same time, like I was disappointed. So, like with this movie, this would be a pro. I did like the fact that this is.
What do you think his midichlorian count was at that age for him to be able to do that? I'm just saying.
Definitely not an Annie, but okay. So like, I thought that was cool that she was Palpatine's granddaughter, but like, who's Palpatine's son? Like what? Again, they could have used Rogue One or something to establish this character like that, you know, the Emperor, you know,
well, maybe we'll get a new Disney Plus series to do with it, you know, like the story of Palpatine or something, you know,
that maybe.
You're thinking of Palpatine having a family as any of the three of us would, but that's not what it would be. He is a horrible villain. He probably just raped someone, had a concubine, had a harem, whatever. One of them gave birth. Maybe he was raised in an orphanage. Maybe she gave him away. Maybe she died. Who knows? Then that kid went on to have another kid. And at some point realizes his connection is like, we need to get rid of her, hide her, do something. Mm-hmm. Her being abandoned is not that far off from Luke being dropped off with his aunt and uncle. Not knowing his true parentage either.
Yeah, that is true. And I always thought that was weird that they would still use the last name Skywalker. Because you'd think people would be like, hey, wait a minute. But yeah, like,
what about her using the Skywalker name? Just her deciding, like, oh, I never married the guy. We didn't even have sex, but sure, I'll just steal his last name.
Okay.
I thought.
Okay, so
I hit a sensitive spot.
No, when Rise of Skywalker was announced, my thought was they're not going to be Jedi anymore. They're going to be called Skywalkers, and she would be the first.
Oh, that's actually kind of a good theory.
So it's more taking it like as a knight, like I am Sir Galahad. Sir,
do you Lance moonlight as JJ?
Rey Skywalker.
Well, and to be honest, Kevin,
I have lens flares in my room right now.
I'm being lens flared at the moment. But yeah, no, Kev, I totally get what like to me that's cool. And actually, I just kind of was like, okay, whatever, we're going there. It would have been awesome. Like, why did she go to Luke's, you know, childhood home to bury lightsabers? Like, why would you bury them? Like, I don't get that.
Yeah, I agree.
To me, it would have been
to bury Leia's, who was never there.
And not just that, but some random old woman walking around with a camel, like, oh, hey, no one's been here in a while. Where the fuck did you come from? You're just walking around like, but anyway.
Not even a speeder camel or anything,
just,
right?
Yeah. Just like... Oh, hey. You know? I'm in the middle of nowhere, but cool.
I love it when you get upset about this stuff, Chris. This is so funny.
But you know what they should have done? What I kind of thought they were going for is Rey going here. Like, this was where they were going to build the new Jedi Temple. Like, that's kind of what I thought was happening. She's got the lightsaber.
I thought she was going to be pregnant. That would have made sense to me, as if she was fucking pregnant and she wanted to raise it, you know, where the Skywalker's name was kind of raised. Like, that would have made sense to me.
Oh, like without a dad? Like Anakin's mom?
Or like,
yeah, like if Darth Rylo had fucking put his baby in her through touching her his fucking finger, like, you know, the whole Jesus thing, Star Wars is all based around, right?
My question about that is, I thought somewhere it was established, it's like, I can't remember where, I know I read this, that Palpatine is actually Anakin's father.
He summoned
the midichlorians.
The Force.
Yeah.
Like he controlled the Force of midichlorians to impregnate her. So he did not use his sperm, his body in any way.
He
manipulated the Force to do it.
Okay.
And it was in one of the books, I think.
Okay, so that being said, so wouldn't Rey technically be his aunt? Like his great aunt? Or no,
maybe well, there's no blood.
But it's still Palpatine. And Anakin's still technically Palpatine. It's like Jesus is still the son of God, even if God didn't bang the Virgin Mary. Like, I mean, that's still his dad, right? So Palpatine's still his dad.
I don't think you're allowed to say bang when referencing the Virgin Mary.
But yeah, like... So,
well, under like, that logic, though, there's no blood between Jesus and if Joseph had a relative.
So are you saying Joseph slipped it in?
No, I'm saying there wouldn't be...
I'm really confused now.
Let's throw it all out there. If we go back to dogma, all she has to do is be the Virgin Mary at birth of Jesus. It doesn't mean she was always the Virgin Mary. She could have had a kid later in life. And Christian mythology, John, the most loved apostle, there's a certain sect that believes he is Jesus' brother and was a child that came along later in life.
Oh, interesting.
My thought was, to go back to it, because there's no emperor sperm, I can't believe that came out of my mouth, that there's no blood, so you wouldn't have, mountain hill people inbred thing happening between the Skywalkers
or Targaryens. And... Targaryens. You know, it's not unheard of an aunt and a nephew in recent pop culture hooking up.
Did we just venture into nerd lunch fan fiction territory here, or?
No, I'm like. The Emperor being Anakin's dad, that was a thing, and I'm thinking, okay, well, that would make them related then. But anyway, they didn't actually do anything, so,
This in the series, they had a brother and sister kiss, so.
That is true, but they didn't know, though. They didn't know, and that's what I keep telling people when they keep pointing that out. They didn't know. All right, well, let's move on from talking about the Bible and stuff. So... What did Finn want to say to Rey? Like that drove me nuts.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that's
okay. This JJ actually did an interview where he said that he cut the scene because it didn't. He was getting, cut the time, and it wasn't necessary and it wasn't needed. But now he wishes he kept it in because everyone's like, "What was he gonna say?" Apparently, Finn was gonna say, "Rey, I'm force sensitive." And rumors that shot and everything.
Because he's been feeling everything the whole movie. Yeah.
Well, that was like one of the pros I wanted to talk about. From The Force Awakens, going back all the way to The Force Awakens, and then I'll get into the con for this movie. I really liked Finn in The Force Awakens. I thought he was a great new character.
I liked him in all of them.
Yeah.
Well... It's not that I don't like him. I just don't like what they did with him. I thought he was a great new character. Towards the end of the film, when he grabs the lightsaber and fights Kylo Ren, that was one of the greatest moments, I think, in Star Wars history. You know, this regular dude, Rey's down for the count. He picks up the lightsaber. He ignites it.
And this, the love and the rage mixed together, right?
Like, he knows he's fucked. He knows he doesn't have a chance, but he's doing it anyway. And that was such a great heroic moment. And then The Last Jedi comes around, and they turn him into a jokey character. You know, like, he comes out of that coma, and he's wearing that, coveralls with all the liquid and... He just becomes
kind of the water leaking it. What do you mean, BB-8?
Yeah, he kind of becomes a joke. And then in the last movie, they, built up this kind of romance with Rose, which I was okay with.
That bothered me in this one.
Yeah, I was perfectly fine with it. It's like, okay, guy's getting, got a girl.
They were cute.
Yeah. I know
Rose was a great character, and she just got cut out of this new movie.
Well, the unfortunate thing.
Because somebody had to go and fucking kick the bucket.
Well, the unfortunate thing is...
She got Jar Jarred.
Yeah, she got a lot of online hate. A lot of people were shitting on her, and she had to close her the actress herself had to close her social media accounts because she was getting death threats. She was getting, you know, all this ugliness directed towards her.
Why?
I don't know why. I liked her. I thought, you know, unlike Jar Jar, which I don't like, you know, I want to stress that, but I wouldn't wish ill on Ahmed Best, the actor. I liked Rose. I thought she was great in The Last Jedi, and I was looking forward to seeing more of that relationship in this movie, and she just got totally sidelined.
Didn't even get to kiss at the end of the movie when everybody was meeting up at the very end of the movie, when everybody's like, oh, yay, like, let's have another Endor party, and we'll all meet up, and the Resistance won, and hooray, and all the friends are getting back together. They don't even show her and Finn looking at each other, seeing, like, they show her kind of looking around, mm-hmm. but then they just show Finn hugging with Bo and Bay, or Poe and Rey, or whatever.
Yeah.
and then they skip his girlfriend. There. Like, man, what the... Mm-hmm. Yeah. And apparently it's because of the CGI Leia, which I don't understand how that was CGI. It looked so... Look way better than Moff Tarkin. So,
yeah, it was a shame. It was a shame what they did to that character and that actress. Like they were definitely, when Ahmed Best, Jar Jar got all the hate. You know, his character got really downgraded in Episode 2, and then like he got a non-speaking role in Episode 3. That's kind of what I felt happened with her, and I don't understand it. Like,
but for less of a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did not deserve it. Jar Jar, the character, deserved it.
Yes, yeah, not the actor.
Yeah, like, not the actress.
And
yeah.
Rose, actress or character, did not deserve it.
No, she definitely did not deserve that.
But, that being said, we still have yet to see the J.J. Abrams, uncut Donner version or whatever, right? Like, whenever they come out with the extended... special edition or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like, true. then they'll add stuff back in, and hopefully she'll have more.
Yeah.
Zack Snyder cut.
So yeah,
Star Wars, the Zack Snyder.
So yeah, that was definitely a disservice to that character and her. Okay, so another one. Where did the old general come from? Like that new old general that seems to be in charge of, the military for the first or final order, whatever you want to call him. Where was he in the first two movies?
Just because we had the mole story, they had to add someone else.
Yeah, they had to have someone to take over for Hux.
But are you talking about the guy that was like, when he was talking to the Emperor, he's like, I served you in the past and I'll serve you again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really fucked with me, because I was like, wait a minute, you served him in the past, so am I supposed to go back now and watch the original trilogy, and by that I mean 4, 5, and 6, and look for this character?
He ain't there.
No, it seemed like we got like 50 pages into the script and realized, oh shit, we need a character here to fill this role, let's just create him right now.
Well,
like that.
Well, when they were doing the whole thing, like, oh, there's a mole in it, it's like, I'm like, obviously it's Hux, otherwise why the fuck is this guy here all of a sudden? He's here to take over for Hux. No, I like that actor. I just wish they had had him like in The Force Awakens. Like, why wasn't that guy? One of my biggest complaints about The Force Awakens.
Well, they did the exact same thing that they did in Rebels.
What?
Right? Because in Rebels, they had the... I forget his name now, but they had the main antagonist of the first, possibly second season, who... was like their main enemy, the blonde guy with the meat chop sideburns or whatever. Yeah. They had him.
Cad Bane?
Yeah, and he became the mole later, and then he became a part of their team. So they did the exact same thing in this movie.
They did, but that guy wasn't like the boss. Like, Hux was established as being the guy running. Like, he's the one that gave the Hitler speech in Force Awakens. Like, this was the guy that was the boss. And then all of a sudden, this guy's like, hey, I'm actually, higher up than you are. It's like, what? Where'd this guy come from? Like, not
well, that I mean, after you get an entire planet destroyed and stop the entire rise of your new empire by fucking shit up, I'm pretty sure you're going to have somebody get promoted past you.
Well, that could also... He would share the blame with Kylo on that one, because Kylo definitely dropped the ball a couple times there.
Also, both sides kind of play fast and loose with military promotions in general.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very true.
Like, that was one of my complaints about The Force Awakens. It just seemed like this new, you know, First Order was run by millennials. It's like, where's the old guard? Where's the old guys from the Empire? You know? Not that
I wonder nothing ever got done.
Not that I didn't like Hux. Like, actually, that he kind of grew on me, you know, other than he got treated like a buffoon.
I want to see that as a meme.
But think about it. Like, wouldn't it have been cool if they had, like, say, someone like Charles Dance, who played Tywin Lannister, have him be, like, the head of the, you know, the military?
Like, Chris, it's over.
Someone older...
Game of Thrones is done. Get over it.
No, but I'm just saying, an older actor like that would make more sense to me. And having this guy come in, it was like, okay, this makes sense to me, but where were you two movies ago?
Yeah.
So, anyway...
I'd like to know what you guys thought about them adapting the Legends storyline, because I believe it started off as an expanded universe and then it became Legends. But the whole Palpatine clone thing, that was very I was very taken aback that they went that route. Like, when that started happening, I was like, holy shit, like, what the fuck?
Before we
his army of ghost clone onlookers.
Okay, look, before we get to that, I just want to finish off on this general thing real quick. And we already mentioned it, the Hux double cross. What? I don't understand what his motivations were here. Like, it was so dumb, considering...
Yeah, they don't really explain it.
Well, he basically says, oh, I just wanted to make sure Kylo didn't win. And I'm like, what? Like, again, this is the guy that gave the Hitler speech in Force Awakens. Like, he's literally standing shouting that they're going to destroy the New Republic to, you know, millions of stormtroopers. And he's just going to double-cross, you know, everything he's worked towards, you know, everything he's helped to build. He's just going to throw it away because he hates Kylo Ren?
Well, he did kind of get...
I thought it was more kind of a coup of, I need this guy out so I can be in control, so I'm willing to make a deal over here my enemy's enemy, just to get him out. But then as soon as he's out, I'm still going to be an asshole and be your enemy, but my main competition is out. And I think it goes back to Last Jedi, during that final battle, he had it won until Kylo's like, no, I'm in charge here. We already got it won. Nope. Do as I say. All right. I'm out. This is your battle to lose now.
But if I remember correctly, maybe I got this wrong, but didn't he have, like, some sort of line there where he says, like, I don't care who wins as long as Kylo doesn't?
Like, no, he's... Yeah, actually, yeah. You're right, he did. Yeah.
So, he's just saying, like, he doesn't care if his side loses.
Like, I guess at that point, Kylo has just... you know, like, berated him and cucked him so much that all he cares about is, you know, bringing down this one asshole so that he can, you know, hopefully rise to power either in the same ranks or somewhere else again. But he just wants this one guy to get taken down because this one guy ruined everything that he did, which admittedly the stuff that he did and that he brought to power, like, that was a lot. Like, he did a lot. He was a very powerful person. And then Kylo Ren came in as this, like, little fucking boy in a mask pretending to be a badass, you know, with emotional problems and tighty whities on. And all of a sudden, boom, now everything I've worked for the past 15 years is fucking gone. Or whatever.
Yeah.
So to me, that kind of makes sense. But I do see your point, Chris.
All right. Well, let's get into Emperor Palpatine, since you brought it up there, Rich. Again, you know, like, they obviously, when Rian Johnson killed Snoke, you know, and JJ had to come back, like, and basically, you know, because they obviously had no plan for this movie other than they had to wrap it up, this trilogy, which I don't understand why they had to make it a trilogy. Why not? They should have made two movies out of this, I think. and expanded on some
of
the things.
I think they should have made it a septology, personally. But
well, to me, Rise of Skywalker easily could have been Infinity War and Endgame. Like, Infinity War was a great movie that, you know, helped build Endgame and establish, you know, like, it could have played off each other. You know, this whole notion of having to do a trilogy, I don't understand that. Like, why didn't we just go to episode 10? And then they could have fleshed out a lot of these, you know, plot inconsistencies and these loopholes. Like,
I see what you're saying. Like, they split the Rise of Skywalker in two.
No, yeah, right, yeah, split it in two, and then, yeah, expand on the things that they didn't touch on.
Yeah, that would have been good, actually, right?
For example, the Emperor.
Little Peter Jackson.
Yeah, but, for example, the Emperor, like, you know, all of a sudden he's here. When did this happen? Like, I know it was a necessity, JJ needed a big bad, but like I said, I thought that was going to be Kylo Ren. Like, I thought in the last movie, you know, when he almost killed his mom, and, you know, Rey, you know, basically swatted her hand away, and he tried killing Luke, and I thought he was going to be the big bad. But no, they kind of undid that and had to bring the Emperor in, so we had this established villain that we all know, right? And in my mind, it kind of undermines Vader's sacrifice in Return of the Jedi. You know, him throwing him over. Like, the fact that they don't really explain, other than it's implied that he's somehow cloned. You know, like I said, it was like the Blofeld reveal. Like, it to me, it was
Yeah,
empty.
They just didn't explain anything very well, you're right.
And you just established in Solo what the cartoons had, but now in the movies, why not bring out an old Darth Maul?
Well, they killed him in Rebels, though. Spoilers.
Rebels, okay.
And that's supposed to be considered...
I'm not sure which cartoons are canon anymore.
Well, that one is. Rebels is canon.
Rebels and one other one is, right?
Clone Wars.
Clone Wars.
Okay.
And I'm sorry I ruined that for you, Kev. Because he actually
after Solo, I got confused what isn't canon for it.
You got to watch that episode, like his last episode, because Obi-Wan's in it. It's amazing. It's such a cool scene. But yeah, like, you know, like I said, if they had split this into two movies, they could have expanded on the Emperor a little bit. You know, like they could have said, you know, like, you know, they basically could have walked Kylo through it. Like, oh, hey, you know. When just before he died, he transferred his mind to his clone body, and this is how we do it. And which I'm cool with, but you gotta give me something to work with here. The only reason why I say I think it's cloning is because of all them Snoke bodies in that one tank.
And those were Snokes? I thought they were Palpatines.
No, there was a bunch of Snokes like all piled in a tank, which was really creepy. I don't know why you need so many Snokes, but. You know,
Snoke. No party like a Snoke party.
Well, Snoke dolls or real dolls, but you know, it's Snoke.
Snoke dolls.
I was gonna go with Snoke them if you got them.
There we go. That's why you keep you around there, buddy.
So apparently, Snoke was a clone that the Emperor controlled. This, from what I understand, this movie establishes. But like I said, I just feel like it undermined Vader's sacrifice. Do you guys have anything else you want to say about the Emperor's return?
It's kind of lame.
It should have been handled.
You needed someone after they killed off Snoke. I see him as the go-to. Like, well, we can't bring Vader back for obvious reasons. Let's just bring the Emperor back. I just feel like somewhere in the whole mythos, there is a better answer. For someone to bring in as your new behind the scenes, you know, big evil,
which was supposed to be Snoke, and like it would have been okay if it was, because it's actually kind of a neat idea that it could have been the Emperor. Like in the going back to the prequels, Episode One, the Phantom Menace. He is the Phantom Menace, right? He is the guy behind the scenes, you know, bringing the galaxy to war, right? So it would have been cool if he had been, using air quotes, a Phantom Menace for this sequel trilogy. Like, he's the guy, if they would have just, you know, gave us some clues in The Force Awakens and Last Jedi that he was pulling the strings. Like, maybe you saw some, you know, saw a shadow, or, you know, you seen Snoke talking to him, you know, briefly or something on a hologram. Then it would have been like, hey, wait a minute, was that Palpatine? No way, he's dead. And then boom, bring him back for this movie. If they had laid the groundwork, it could have paid off.
Well, like, your basic right, use the gun, have the gun on page one, mm-hmm. so you can build up to it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm with you. If there was a shadow, a wink, a reference, a reflection, something,
yeah.
even subtle, just something to get you going. Like, ooh, are we going here? Is yeah. this happening? Is this gonna pay off later? Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. But unfortunately, again, Ghost with no plan for this trilogy. Okay, so what's up with the Knights of Ren? You know, all the way back from Force Awakens, you know, Kylo Ren is a member of the Knights of Ren. And, they, you know, you see them in flashbacks. They all wear masks. They're these kick-ass dudes. They were actually in this movie, and I didn't even realize it until, you know, Kylo pretty much killed them. Or he did kill them.
I thought those were Death Troopers.
No. No, those were the Knights of Ren.
Yeah.
More like the Knights of Run.
Oh.
Yeah, like, I mean...
They end up being pointless.
Wasted.
To go back to wrestling analogy, if you walk in and you defeat a bunch of nobodies, you've defeated a bunch of nobodies. But if you've spent time building someone up as a threat and you defeat them, now you've beaten someone.
Somebody watches way too much wrestling.
But we got nothing for the Knights of Ren. They were just dudes.
Yeah.
So when he defeated them, it didn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm. Just a dude playing a dude playing another dude.
Yep. And speaking of where did they come from, and they kind of got wasted, Lando. He just shows up on a random planet. I'm like, oh, hey, Lando Calrissian. Like,
well, because he can't walk.
Yeah.
He's an old man.
Well, yeah. Does he use the cane in the movie? Because I know in real life he uses a cane. I can't remember.
I don't think he walked. I think he was always leaning on something.
Okay. Yeah. Like, I guess Leia sent him to that planet? It's like... Okay. So basically,
in his Return of the Jedi disguise again.
Yeah, like basically his role in this film is to get that fleet together, right? Because in Last Jedi, when Leia put out the call, like, hey, we need help, and nobody came. So this movie basically says, well, they would have came if Lando had been there. And it was Lando that got them all. And it's like, where did all these ships come from in the final battle? Like, okay. So this is going to blow your guys' mind. I don't know if you guys realize this or not. But the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie, do you realize that what happens in that film takes place in the span of 16 hours?
Yeah. That bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
One, not a chance in hell. Two, just covering the distance alone, it can't happen. Three, what's an hour in a galaxy far, far away?
Well, yeah.
What's an hour as you're jumping planets? So your 16 hours is not 16 Earth hours.
Well,
you're just throwing that out there as a... The word meant nothing by the end of it.
Yeah, like that... Yeah, if they mean 16 Earth hours, that is mind-blowing. That happened. You know, Kylo going to see the Emperor, hunting Rey, getting killed, getting brought back. You know, Lando...
16 Tatooine hours or something.
Yeah, Lando showing up on that planet. Lando going back to the Resistance base. Hey, I'll get the fleet. Him going off. Him coming back with a fleet through that, like, maze that they had to fly through. that all happened in 16 hours. Like, that just, I don't know, blows my mind. Okay, let's get back to talking about Palpatine. Who were all those people in the Sith Temple? Like, what was that? Were they Sith Force ghosts? Is that what was going on there?
No, it reminded me of, and it's probably been years since either of you have seen the movie, because it has for me, when Spawn goes to hell at the end of the Spawn movie, and there's all these other Hellspawn symbiote, but not symbiote things, like, getting ready to go up into Earth, and he has to stop them all.
Yep. That's what it, like, reminded you of?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I'm guessing it's all the clones or people or whatever that were going to pilot the thousands of Star Destroyers that they also made in secret.
Yeah, that's... I didn't quite understand that. I assumed, because at the same time, like, when Rey, you know, stood up to face off against the Emperor, she's hearing all the, you know, voices of the Jedi. Like, she heard Hayden Christensen's Anakin, Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan. She heard Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, Ahsoka Tano.
They snuck in. There it is.
Yeah. I think Samuel L. Jackson was in there too. So I'm assuming, like, this place, like, where they were at, channels Force ghosts, and maybe those were Force ghosts that were in the stands cheering Palpatine on. But again, like, they never explained it. Like what exactly was going on here?
It was like they were at some wellspring of a fountainhead of the Force. So the Force is stronger there, the Jedi power is stronger there, Sith is stronger there. It was like they were at the actual source of all of it.
Yeah. Okay, so continuing on this train of who are all these people, who's flying all those Star Destroyers? You know, like I understand, like, when the Emperor was in charge of the galaxy, like, I get it. He was the Emperor. You know, the Starfleet, or whatever they called them, were, you know, like, enforcing the Emperor's will, right? Like, I understand, like, he's in charge. He's probably, you know, like, the Empire's got shipyards. They got these recruitment programs. And, you know, if you go back and watch the original Star Wars, A New Hope, Luke wanted to go to the academy. He was going to be a pilot for Palpatine. Like, because that was the government at the time. Like, that was who was in charge of the galaxy. He was going to go be a pilot.
I mean, it might be tough for you Canadians, but imagine as an American that you grow up in a poor, desolate area, and your only way out is to join a military that you might not agree with, but it's a way to get out of where you are.
Oh, absolutely. Wait, how is that hard to believe in Canada?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I totally get it.
Because we don't have a military, or because we don't have ghettos? I don't get it.
Well, we didn't accidentally start
a war this week.
That is true.
Oh.
And we did lose our submarine.
I really need to get on Twitter.
We did lose our submarine fleet in West Edmonton Mallrich. I don't know if you got that memo, but our submarines are no longer in West Edmonton.
I do remember that happening, yeah, sometime in the late 2000s.
Yeah, that was our largest fleet of submarines. Gone. But anyway.
One.
No, there was three. There was three.
Oh, there was three. I thought it was just one.
Oh, yeah. I rode one when I was a kid. Actually, I took my kids to it before they shut it down. But anyway, who is controlling these Star Destroyers?
Controlling them? There were people on.
But where did these people come from? Like, I understand.
Well, if you can make a like, I don't know what, like 100 or 200 or 300 Star Destroyers with your Sith powers, what makes you think that they can't just make a bunch of clones again or use Sith powers to magically make a bunch of fucking morons to not shoot anybody properly and run a ship?
Well, I don't think he used the Sith powers to make it. I'm assuming people actually constructed them.
Well, they said in the movie, that they used the Sith powers to create the Star Destroyers.
They did? I totally don't remember that. Like, Palpatine used
Something like he's been doing it in secret for years.
Yeah.
He's been using Force? His
Sith powers to create them. Yeah.
Okay.
Again, if they can pass things from halfway around the galaxy and bring people back to life, Chris, I'm not seeing how you don't believe this.
Well,
you already fell for everything else.
Well, I just assume
this isn't Clerks with your.
With the contractors working on the
independent outside. Contractors.
Yeah, no, I see. Again, like I wish they would have explained. Like, it might have been clones because, like I said, they got that tank of Snoke clones. So maybe, and I'm assuming the Emperor is a clone. So I'm a
100,000 Snokes building all these ships.
Maybe. Well, like, think about it. Like, if Snoke was that powerful with the Force, if you had like a bunch of them, they could technically use the Force to make ships.
If you gave 1,000 clone Snokes 1,000 clone typewriters,
that it is possible. It is possible. But who's controlling? Like, are they all automated? One thing that they never, which, as far as I know, hasn't been talked about or established. It could be droids piloting those ships. At the end of Revenge of the Sith, like, they deactivated the droid armies. Like, Snoke or Palpatine could be using those. You know, because I'm assuming the Empire took all the Separatists' stuff and was like, okay, we're gonna save this for later in case we need it. Like, I just wish they would have explained it a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, I heard assuming that the Emperor's little minions or whatever there are the same beings piloting the ships. I didn't hear it, Roger, Roger, but it could have been all the droids.
It's possible. It's possible. And not only that, so the laws of space, like, again, we're getting into the Force magic shit. The laws of space don't apply where the Star Destroyers are. Like, Finn and that group of his are literally riding horses on the Star Destroyer.
I found it. How did Palpatine procure a Sith fleet of thousands of Zystion-class Star Destroyers, each equipped with the Death Star laser? He built it over the past several decades while utilizing the work of all of his Sith Eternal cultists on Exegol.
Okay, so those were actual people then. They were just cultists.
I guess. And they were all hidden under the ice of Exegol.
Yeah.
I guess.
They really needed to flesh this out a little bit more. Like, they definitely needed two
movies. I think we could have gotten another movie or two out of it.
Yeah, but okay, so Exegol, like, where the Star Destroyers are, like, you can walk out in space? Like Finn and those guys are literally riding horses on a Star Destroyer. And not, like, freezing to death or choking to death in the vacuum of space. Like, how did...
They're in the atmosphere of a planet.
Atmosphere of a planet?
They were still in the atmosphere, yes.
Okay, yeah. I assume they were, like, in a nebula. Like, it was, like, I don't know.
No, Exegol is covered in ice, I guess, and because of all the ice, as you're ascending into the atmosphere, it creates a lot of mist and fog, and then that's why it just kind of looked like a bunch of clouds and shit, I'm guessing, or something like that.
Okay.
Maybe.
Okay.
I'm kind of going out on a limb here, but seconds of reading I just did.
Yeah, because when the Emperor Force Lightning the fleet, they were falling into something. The planet, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. And there were, like, things were crashing into the ground at one point as well, because she was on the ground with Palpatine, because Palpatine was on the ground, right? He was in some sort of Sith temple on the ground of Exegol.
Okay. All right, so piggybacking onto this whole ship thing. So we find out in this movie that if you have a magic imperial coin, you can get access to any ship. So the Zori Bliss, you know, what's her name's character, Felicity's character, she gives Poe this coin, which allows him access to the Star Destroyer, which I can't remember. They rescued Chewie, and then they used it to get access to the ships to destroy them. I don't know. Like, that really confused me. Like, since when?
Well, I mean, it's really no different than having Imperial codes.
I guess.
It's just the Imperial codes are now in a disc.
But you would think there'd be some sort of authentication required, you know, especially if you're getting access.
But that is the authentication.
But anyone could steal a coin. Like, a street bum could steal that coin and get onto a Star Destroyer.
Well, not any street bum can take on a stormtrooper with a laser eye precision aim. How are they going to get the coin?
They're pretty bad shots. Pretty easy.
Which I loved that they actually didn't get any better throughout the series.
Yeah. Okay, so another question I got. Who's running the galaxy? Okay, so in The Force Awakens, the New Republic was destroyed. Like, their capital planet was obliterated by Starkiller Base. So the final order was completely destroyed at the end of this movie. So who's running things now? Like, Princess Leia's dead, so she's not going to be running nothing. Like, who, like, what's happening to the galaxy? Like, you know.
Well, wouldn't you assume that it's just going to revert back slowly into a republic? Right? Because, I mean, if all of these planets were under the rule of an empire, like the like 4, 5, and 6, then you would assume that after it breaks up, they're all going to form another form of republic. Maybe not the same type, but some form of republic of planet. Or maybe it's a federation of planets.
You would assume, but all the people that could have founded it got killed. So, like, at least in the in the last movie,
well, there's billions of people in the universe. So you would assume that, you know, they could form a federation of all the different planets and get together a fleet of stars to be able to.
I don't know, man. Like, honestly, like the old Republic had the Jedi to help keep people in line and to mediate and so on and so forth.
Now they have the Skywalkers.
The Empire had their fleet, their stormtroopers, their armies. This New Republic, they have Rey. I don't know. I think we're all happy at the end of the movie. Everyone's having their, you know, Return of the Jedi celebration again. But at the end of the day, it's like,
but I mean,
who's going to be running the Republic?
The Jedis didn't actually do all that much, because I mean, if you look at a bunch of the
were
the expanded universe type of stuff, everybody always says the Jedis just hole up in their temples and they never do anything.
Well, they
they just handled the big stuff. So all the little things, the actual running of the galaxy was still handled by a Republic.
Yeah.
The only thing that the Jedis did was just enforce laws, and technically you can get anybody with a fucking gun to do that.
Well, they did a little bit more. Like, they were diplomats, they were ambassadors, they were peacekeepers.
But again, you can get anybody to do that. They don't need special powers to do that. That just helps.
But whoever's in charge literally has nothing now. Like, at least the Empire was born from the Republic that had been around for 1,000 years, right? And then,
well, maybe we'll find out 2 years when the next movie comes out.
Yeah, but
I believe it's set for 2022.
But if the rumors are true, I heard the next movie's actually going to be take place in the Old Republic. It's going to be a Knights of the Old Republic movie.
Well, yeah, they've been saying that for a while. All I know is that they have two movies set for 2022 and 2024, I think, right?
Probably, but yeah.
Ironed out what it's going to be, at least not in public.
I would love a Knights of the Old Republic movie, and from what I understand, they said we're getting away from trilogies. Like, they're not.
Maybe we're getting a Knights of the New Republic.
Maybe.
Skywalker's
I think who's controlling it is the businessman in that world. Well, not that world. Oh, that the part Vegas of the galaxy. World. That, yep, that we got a glimpse of in Last Jedi. Hey, I don't care if you're a good side, bad side, Republic or Empire. As long as I can make a profit, it's all that I care about.
So Benicio del Toro is going to run the galaxy.
Maybe. Maybe. Yeah, where was he in this movie? All right.
Spending his millions.
So another thing, if they brought Palpatine back for this movie, what's to stop him from returning again? Like, do you think he's got a backup plan? Like, he's got another planet somewhere where he's going to...
It's the end of the series. That's what's stopping him.
Yeah, like, well, that's the thing. The way they brought him back, they left it so open-ended that he can always come back. Like, it's a thing now, right? And again, I think that was kind of a mistake. Okay, so some of the little plot things that plot conveniences, I'm going to call them. For example, Kylo was about to kill Rey, but Leia reaches out to him using the Force, so he doesn't. If she could reach him with the Force, why didn't she do this years ago?
That was her last act, though.
I guess.
She reached out desperately, used the Force to bring Han back, or a vision, or a memory, or whatever, to turn him. But that was her last act. If she did that years ago, there goes her being a general. There goes her being in charge.
I guess, yeah. So, yeah. That, to me, that was just a little too convenient. Oh, the Sith dagger. So the Sith dagger manages to line up with the destruction of the second Death Star. If it's an ancient dagger, how would it line up with the destruction of the second Death Star?
Yep.
So they're okay.
A Death Star that's would consistently be falling apart as those waves keep hitting it. It would crumble more, and it shouldn't look like that for years. Mm-hmm. It should keep falling apart.
Did anybody else think that that was one of the coolest parts of the movie, though, is seeing that?
Oh, like, yeah.
Seeing the that second was just really cool
visual.
Oh, yeah. No, that was awesome.
But also kind of confusing, because if you have a Republic, or sorry, not a Republic, a Resistance that is low on supplies, and they have a like a Death Star that's still kind of in like a few good pieces, couldn't you just go to that planet and take what's left of it and then reuse that to build more shit? Like, why wouldn't anybody have thought of that? Why wouldn't even the Empire have thought of that? Like, there was still some good usable shit there, clearly. There was like armor around, there was weapons.
Okay, so like, my question to you guys is, was that Endor? That Death Star
was, wasn't it Endor's moon?
Well, Endor is a moon, right?
Endor is the moon.
So that was the main planet then, right? That it crashed on?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. It wasn't actual, because they showed Endor later. Yeah, right? Said, like, yeah. With all the Ewoks.
System or the Endor area or something like that, yeah.
Because, like, when they were, going to the, Death Star and they had to go get those skiffs or whatever to go across, like, I'm thinking, where are the Ewoks? When are they going to show up? But then I was like, maybe this, because I don't know. Like, I just assumed the planet that Endor was orbiting was, like, a gas giant. I didn't realize it was a actual Class M planet that had its own thing going on.
There he goes with his fucking Star Trek words again.
Yeah, with my big boy words.
with my big boy science fiction.
So, yeah, that... Anyway, yeah, that kind of... I think that's all I got, guys. Do you guys have anything you want to add to The Rise of Skywalker?
I would like to actually just spout off a few interesting numbers. from Box Office Mojo. So, albeit the movie has only been out for 2 weeks at this point, I find it very interesting that its opening weekend is the lowest of the new trilogy.
Really?
By almost $100 million.
It had all that money Cats was bringing in.
Yeah, definitely. So it had a domestic opening weekend of $177 million, whereas, The Force Awakens had an opening weekend of $248 million, and Last Jedi had an opening weekend of $220 million. Here's the really interesting part, though, is Rogue One had an opening weekend of $155 million. So it almost did as badly, or Rogue One almost did as well as this movie did, even though there's no, like, Rogue One was a story by itself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Whereas this had a whole set of movies leading up to it. This is the end game of the Star Wars universe, and yet it had the lowest opening weekend, which I find very interesting. Albeit, again, it's only been out for 14 days. So far, it has a domestic gross of $417 million and a worldwide gross of $840 million.
Well,
so, it's getting there. But
to be honest with you, I think they're not getting a lot of repeat viewings. Like, for me, I've only seen it once. And to be honest with you, I don't know if I'm going to go see it again in theaters. Because because I live in a smaller town, this movie probably won't come for another 2-3 weeks to my local theater. So I went to the city to see it. And, you know, like when I got home and my wife was asking me about it, because I went by myself. And she's asked me, so did you like it? And I was like, it was okay. And she's like, so are you going to see it when it comes to town? I'm like, actually, I don't know. Like, normally, if I see a movie and I really like it, I'll go watch it in town. I usually bring my wife with me to watch it for the second viewing, right? For this one, I don't even know if I want to see it, to be honest with you. Like, because you said it came out 2 weeks ago. For example, Avengers Endgame, within 2 weeks, I'd already seen it 3 times. Like, I loved that movie, and I was willing to go back.
Somebody's got money to burn.
Well, I got a scene card.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, it, I just, like literally, I watched Endgame the Friday, like, it was released, whatever, midnight on the Thursday or whatever. I seen it Friday morning, and I literally went back Saturday morning and saw it, because I happened to be in Calgary that weekend for the Comic-Con. And then, yeah, like, within a week and a half later, I took my wife to see it, and, you know, I probably saw Endgame in the theaters 4 or 5 times, to be honest with you. So I think with this film, they're losing a lot of repeat viewings. Like, I think people are just not going to watch it a second time.
I would agree. I think that a lot of people are going to wait for it to come out on the internet. And people like me are going to be waiting for the rumored J.J. Abrams 3-hour cut that apparently exists. Apparently there's a 3-hour cut of the movie, and I personally would love to see that.
Well, yeah, if it's good, they should have released it as a 3-hour movie, like, without a doubt.
Well, I mean, the longest movie out of them all was the last one, which was only 2 hours and 31 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they only shaved off 9 minutes off of that, you know what I mean? And I don't think any Star Wars movie has been over 2.5-ish hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
So having a 3-hour Star Wars movie would be very long, whereas having a 3-hour Marvel movie isn't necessarily unheard of, because, you know, all the Avengers movies tend to be in the 230 to 240 area, right? So for Star Wars, theatrically, a 3-hour movie doesn't make sense, but on DVD or as a Disney Plus exclusive or something like that, maybe we'll see it.
Yeah,
they'd be really smart, actually, to do it as a Disney Plus exclusive.
That would be awesome,
especially with the amount of shit they have not given us so far for all that money we gave them. Speaking of Disney Plus,
well, before we get into discussing The Mandalorian, I want to ask you guys, I'm assuming you guys remembered, to rank the films, like if you're going to go from your favorite to your least favorite Star Wars films.
Do we have to give them scores?
No. You don't have to get as in depth as I did. So for me, I would, I'll kick it off. Best, The Empire Strikes Back. Easily one of my favorite movies of all time. Love that movie. My second, number two on my list for going from best to worst, Revenge of the Sith. It definitely was the best of the prequels. Great action, dialogue, obviously terrible, because George Lucas cannot write dialogue. But, I mean, the lightsaber fights, Yoda fighting the Emperor, you know, Obi-Wan fighting Anakin, that, you know, the way that ended brutally.
Annie.
Yeah, amazing. Tied in third place for me is Rogue One and Return of the Jedi. Both good films. I enjoyed them. The next is Star Wars: A New Hope. You know, when I was a kid, it was just called Star Wars. It's the one that started it all. Force Awakens. It comes in next after that. Despite it being a subtle redo of A New Hope, it introduces some, you know, great new characters. Like I said, you know, the moment when Finn takes the lightsaber, easily one of the easily, in my opinion, the best moment of that movie. And one of the best moments in all of the Star Wars movies. Then right after Force Awakens is Rise of Skywalker. It's a good film. But as we mentioned on this podcast in the last hour and 26 minutes that we've been talking, there's a lot that they missed on this film. And it kind of ended the sequel series on a whimper, I think. After that, tied in second to last place is Episode One, The Phantom Menace, and Solo, a Star Wars movie. Phantom Menace, that Darth Maul lightsaber fight at the end is absolutely amazing. I love it. One of the best lightsaber battles. Solo, you know, it had some good stuff. Like I said, I wish they would have used certain elements in that film and certain elements of Rogue One to help build up this sequel trilogy a little bit more. A little bit of world building I think they could have used. And then the last ones tied for last place is The Last Jedi and Attack of the Clones. The Last Jedi was an unwelcome departure from what had been established in the previous films. Episode 2 is just badly written. It's a badly written love story. But, you know, I will give it...
don't forget badly filmed and badly acted.
Yeah. Yes. I'm not going to argue with you on that one. But seeing Yoda bust out the lightsaber for the first time was pretty cool. That was definitely... my jaw dropped when I saw that for the first time. All right, Kevin. How do you rank the Star Wars films?
So it's interesting to hear you break up trilogies within it, because I can't.
Interesting.
So I would do.
And I notice a lot of people can't. I've noticed that on other lists I've seen and I've heard on other podcasts, people can't do that. So you're not alone in this, Kev.
Yeah. Star Wars: New Hope, Empire Jedi is 1, 2, 3.
Nice.
And yes, Empire, you know, I agree with you for it being better overall, but Star Wars just, it's always going to have that nostalgia. Mm-hmm. It's always going to have that, this is where it started, this is the one I've seen the most. It's always going to get that spot. I think I'd put Rogue One right after as at 4. Super good, out of nowhere, much better than it should have been, and adds an extra dimension to those first
amazing three. Action too.
Yeah, super depressing. Like,
yeah,
you kind of need a break after it, but it's good.
Again, can I just interject? I just wish with Rogue One, they could have, like, introduced Ray's parents in that. Like, what's her name? Like, Felicity Jones? I thought that was Ray's mom. Like, when I was watching that movie, I'm like, they're gonna reveal that's Ray's mom. And then, obviously, they didn't. But, you know, like, I would have been
okay with that.
And also, one thing I would have been okay with is Vader's butler. Like, that guy that comes to Vader to tell him that Director Krennic was there. I thought that was Snoke. I was like, that's Snoke. Like, that was my theory going into The Last Jedi, was that Snoke was Vader's butler at Castle Vader. But anyway, sorry, Kev, continue.
No, sorry. The new trilogy next. And I think I would go Force Awakens, Skywalker, or Last Jedi.
That sounds
Solo
right.
After that. It's not as bad as the prequels, but it's not good. And then Clones, Phantom Menace. No. What am I thinking?
Revenge?
Yeah. Phantom Menace, Revenge, Clones. Clones is last no matter what. Mm-hmm. Clones is always going to be last. But part of putting it together, each trilogy, is I see them as one complete story. Four, five, and six, the original, is this is the story of a nobody, or so he thought and we thought at the beginning, destined to be good. And he struggles and he has doubt and he's tempted by this dark side. But he is destined for good. And then the prequels is a story of a nobody on a backwards planet who is destined to be evil. And they were warned and they were told that this is not a good idea and you shouldn't train him and you should leave him. And we tried to put nothing but positive influences into him, but he got corrupted and he was destined to be evil. And yes, we have, you know, Luke saving his father at the end of Jedi, but destined to be evil. And then I can accept the Rian Johnson story with 7, 8, and 9 are you are in charge of your own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Rey is tempted by evil. Ben Solo, Kylo, is tempted by good. Luke makes mistakes and changes his own destiny.
He's tempted Finn by his sister.
Finn was a stormtrooper who changed his path in life. Poe should have been nobody and changed it. Hell, even the droids changed their destinies. So it doesn't matter, which is why I was okay with Rian saying, you know, you're no one special. You're not from anything. Because it doesn't map anything out anymore. I could have seen Kylo staying evil the whole time. I could have seen the turn, which happened. I could have seen Rey turning at some point. I never felt like anything was a guarantee because the rules were broken. We didn't know what was going to happen. We have a stormtrooper as the hero here. That movie starts out with him agreeing not to kill and suffering the consequences, but then going on this grand adventure too. And they all kind of made their own decisions. Even there's a lot of humor that was not necessary in Last Jedi. There's too much, honestly. But there was a lot of, I made a mistake. Poe makes the most. But there was a lot of, I made mistakes and now I have to deal with those consequences. I have to deal with the path I chose. And then there's things that come out and you're like, hey, this thing you thought was happening is not what's actually happening. Because you thought where we were going, but you don't. The best example being, who the hell is the one that takes command when Leia is knocked out? And then does the jump to light speed through the Star Destroyer?
Oh,
in Jedi,
General Purple Hair.
the whole maneuver.
She was hot. Yeah.
But you thought she was awful. You thought she was weak. You thought you knew her destiny and how everything was planned out. And then, holy shit. That is just such an amazing scene of sacrifice.
But the problem with that scene, though, is if she was going to sacrifice herself anyway, how come she didn't do that in the fucking first place?
Not just that, but...
Like, I thought that rewatching it the other day. I was like, why the fuck wouldn't she have just done that right from the beginning? If she was just going to die to save everybody, she should have done that and died gloriously.
Well, in this movie, they because someone brought it up when they were meeting, and they're like, well, let's just fly, you know, some ships into it. And they're like, no, the Holdo maneuver is a one in a million thing, which...
Yeah, that only works once. Ignore
yeah, I was like... On. Really? Like, it was not a one in a million thing. Like, I mean, there was not a million chips there. Like the math doesn't work. But that being
said... Yeah, we haven't seen it tried a million times.
Well, yeah, that being said, like, this is Rise of Skywalker. I shouldn't be talking about dwelling on Last Jedi. But as soon as she did that, I was like, okay, if they can do that here, why didn't they do that back in Star Wars? Why didn't they just, you know, get a droid
why
on a
ship? Why didn't they just heal people?
Well, why didn't they get a droid on a ship?
That's what it all comes down
and
to.
And fly into the Death Star. If you could do that, if that's the answer to destroying an enemy ship is to fly into it at light speed, why didn't they do that to the Death Star? Would have saved a lot of lives.
Or the Death Star 2.
But then they have that throwaway line in this, in Rise of Skywalker, that it was a one in a million maneuver, apparently. She's just that good a pilot that she did it.
Apparently.
But anyway, sorry, Kev, I didn't mean to...
No, that's right. But, I mean, like, that's how I see the stories. Maybe that has to do with how the world is in the 70s and the 90s and then into now, that I see as good, evil, and in charge of your own fate.
Yep.
I don't know. And I think, you know, I'll probably, as I'm able to, you know, rewatch them, and, you know, this part 9's on Disney Plus, and God knows what happens, you know, what's coming next, Knights of Old Republic or whatever ends up being. It could change, but that's how I'm feeling right now.
Excellent. Rich, how do you rank the movies?
I did split them up, much like you did. I'd have to go with my top movies being The Caravan of Courage and Battle for Endor right off the bat.
Those are the... one of us is going to do that.
And the Clone Wars movie?
No, I'm actually being serious, though. Those are my favorite Star Wars movies ever, because those are the first ones that I can remember watching. That was my introduction that I remember to the Star Wars universe, and I have very fond memories of watching those at my dad's winter house in Florida, when renting them from the library, and then we go to the beach and we get back and I rewatch them, and it was about two children and I was a child, and, you know, it's kind of like when they turned one of the Power Rangers into a kid, how well that worked out, right?
Sure. I don't know about the Power Rangers, but yeah, like when I was a kid, I did love those movies as well, but unfortunately they really don't hold up today.
That all depends on how much legal marijuana you're ingesting.
I suppose, I guess, yeah.
Sorry, Kevin, you can't indulge in that, I'm sorry.
He can if he goes to California.
It's true. Yeah, it depends on the state and what your medical reason is.
My medical reason is that I have to watch Caravan of Courage. Is that enough? anyway, so out of the actual movies, I would have to go with Empire and Rogue One right at the top, because Empire obviously is an amazing movie. It's got some great scenes in it, and Rogue One I thought was really cool. At the end, when Rogue One was coming out, I was also really getting into all of the new canon books that were coming out. And so I remember reading a bunch of the books before Rogue One came out, and there are prequels and sequels and like side stories to Rogue One in these canon books that they've released. And it really adds a new dimension to Rogue One. And I felt that with that whole new dimension, Rogue One deserved to be a little higher. As a movie by itself, I might rate it a little bit lower, but because at the time that I watched it, I was also enjoying all of these books that had, you know, characters intersplicing throughout them into the movie, and consequences and whatnot, I thought that it was really good. So after that, I'd have to go number two spot, Return of the Jedi. I mean, that's the original end right there. It ended on such a great note. We got all of the, it's just a great movie. Number three spot, A New Hope and The Force Awakens, because those are both kind of the beginnings. They weren't as good, as action packed, as fun as some of the other movies for me, but because they started all the series and they were both great films, those rank at number three for me. Number four would be Skywalker. I liked it, but it wasn't incredible. Last Jedi is following that. It's just a notch under Skywalker for me. Solo is in seventh here, I believe I'm at. but just below that. And then all of the prequels are just right at the bottom. They're just the worst of the worst, which is funny because those were the first Star Wars movies that I remember seeing in the theater. Mm-hmm. They were the first movies that I got to see in a theater at my cottage, because I believe one of them was released right around the time that I was on summer vacation from school, and I was at my cottage, and I'd never gotten to see a movie at the small town theater we have at my cottage. It's, you know, it's like, I think it's one, maybe two screens, like, you know, 50 seats. Like, it's super, super tiny, and it was a really fun experience. And, you know, the games at the same time that were coming out, I was a really big gamer at that age. I was playing a lot of the Star Wars games that were coming out on N64 at the time. So as far as an experience goes, the prequels were my favorite Star Wars experience, because there was so much coming out around that time. Like, there was so much branding, so much merchandising. It was everywhere. And for me, it became life, because I was of that age. I was, you know, I think I was like, what was I? I was 15? No, 14. 13 or 14 when episode one came out. So that's the perfect time to hook a kid, right? Like a young teenager who already loves science fiction and all of this stuff. And then now we have all of these brands and these gaming consoles and these different things that I love that now have Star Wars on them as well, which I had been trained to love, you know, as a child. So as an experience, I would say the prequels win it, because Star Wars had never been bigger in my lifetime than right around, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, when everybody knew Star Wars was coming back. Like, it was big. It was, you know, they had Pepsi, they had candy bars, they had, yep, Lego, they had, you know, all the different games for N64 and for PlayStation, and the PC games were great, and just all of this stuff was all happening at the same time, and it was just such a crazy feeling that everybody had. And then, obviously, we watched the movies, and that feeling went away rather quickly, which is why it's at the bottom of my list. But if I was rating this on an experience and a feeling, they would probably be number one, because I've never felt that way about, or at least I hadn't at that point in my life, about a movie series up until then. Like, that was the first time. And of course, again, since then, I've felt similar things for, you know, the Harry Potter series and the Lord of the Rings series. You know, they're all very close to my heart, and but nothing will ever come close to the amount of consumer, just mind-boggling consumer everything that was out right around the time of the prequels. You know what I mean?
Yep. And that's an awesome perspective. I never really thought of it like that, but That it's true.
Well, I mean, for you guys, it would have been, obviously, the original trilogy was huge when you guys were younger, right?
Yeah.
Because you guys are old, so...
Well, it was like, for me, I watched the original trilogy. I remember watching it on CTV. Like, it would be like a Sunday night movie,
right?
Oh, my
God.
And I remember, for years, I never watched how these movies ended because I'd always fall asleep, because I was like, whatever, 5, 6 years old. I'd fall asleep.
And the commercials. And...
Yeah. And usually, they would start at like 9 o'clock. Usually I'd make it till just past 10 and then I'd be out. So I never saw what Darth Vader looked like without his mask for years. And back in those days, when I was a kid, it was hard to rent the Star Wars movies because they were hard to come by. Like
you're talking about what, the 50s?
Well, the 80s, 90s.
I'm just joking.
But it's not like it is now where they're readily available. Like George Lucas, for whatever reason, he would have these releases, and then you wouldn't see them for a long time.
Kind of like Disney Vault.
Kind of, yeah. And, yeah, so, like, for example, like, for years I had part of The Empire Strikes Back recorded from TV. Like, the first, I want to say, half of the movie, and then my dad, like, recorded over half a hockey game or something. And so for years I only got to watch, like, the first half, and then that was it. The prequels were the first ones I ever saw in theaters. It was, like you said, Rich, it was an awesome time. Like, it's hard to believe it was 20 years ago, over 20 years ago now, that The Phantom Menace came out. And, it was everywhere. Like, I remember KFC, you used to be able to buy Star Wars, like, toys when you went to KFC.
And Pizza and McDonald's.
Well,
everybody had it.
Well, the reason why I remember KFC is because I still have my R2-D2 that I bought from there. And, like, it just died. Like, for years, you could hit the top of R2's head, and it makes the R2 sounds. And it worked.
I want you to go on eBay and see how much that's worth.
Yeah, it probably is worth a little bit. But, I remember... cans of Dr. Pepper having, Jar Jar Binks on the side or
for me, it was Pepsi.
Yeah.
The Pepsi cans were huge back in those days, right? Like,
well,
with all of the prequels and everything.
Yeah, because Dr. Pepper is part of Pepsi. Like, it was Pepsi products. Like, 7-Up had them and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
I was a Pepsi man, though, so.
Yeah.
It was Pepsi or bust.
I'm still a Dr. Pepper guy. All right, well, that awesome perspective. And, all right, so at this point, we are going to switch gears slightly, and we're going to discuss The Mandalorian. was just the Mandalorian theme that you that I inserted into the podcast right there. Rich and Kevin will have to hear it when they listen to this episode, because yeah, I'll be adding the Mandalorian theme as we go into this segment. So Mandalorian, Rich, what are your thoughts on the Mandalorian? Did you like it? Did you not like it? What are you thinking?
So for me, it was a rather interesting ride for me, because I remember watching the first two episodes. Like, I got Disney Plus day one, the first day that it was out. Me and my sister, well, actually me and my brother-in-law, I should say, were talking, and we kind of just went right over our wives' heads and were just like, yeah, me and you, we're going to split it. Like, we don't care what the wives think. Like, we're getting this at $45 a piece and we'll split it. Yeah, done deal. So we got it day one, and I was watching Mandalorian. I was all in. And then I got to episode three. And episode three, if you remember, basically, I believe in episode two, he catches Baby Yoda. And then in episode three, he's bringing him back to the guild. And at the point in the episode where you see him about to go to the planet, he's like literally coming down to the planet. I had a bad feeling about this, to quote a hero from our past in a galaxy far, far away. And I turned it off, and I didn't go back for, really? Basically, I didn't go back until episode seven had been released. So basically right up until the end of December, I didn't want to see anything bad happen to Baby Yoda, even though obviously nothing bad is going to happen. It's like going to be the most profitable character for them forever. But, I didn't want to see anything bad. I have a lot of trouble, with, really dark and gritty shows. Anything that gives me, you know, bad, sad feelings, I have a hard time getting through. I like my happy-go-lucky Marvel style, you know, where everything is big and bright. Like, I still haven't finished, to this day, I still haven't finished the Batman series. Like, the, what was the last one? The Darkest fucking Night or some shit? Fucking know.
Well, don't watch the end of Infinity War, then. You're not going to like what happens at the end of Infinity War.
Well, I mean, I've seen all of the Marvel movies.
I'm just kidding. Because that's pretty dark, but what happens at the end of Infinity War.
But, I mean, it's not like, to me, though, it's also a matter of the scope and the filter, almost. Like, because if you look at a Marvel movie versus, say, for instance, The Mandalorian, or even the Dark Knight movies, they have almost a filter over it where it's actually very dark. And the same can be said even for Watchmen. Watchmen is a very dark show, and not just in content. I mean, the actual colors are muted. Like, you have to turn the brightness up on your screen to be able to see anything. So it feels dark, not just because of what's being said or what's talked about or what's shown, but it feels dark. And I don't like that feeling. So that was very hard for me to get over when I did, and I got back into the show. I was very thankful. It's definitely, like, I believe I commented on one of our posts or maybe messaged you guys once I had finished both The Mandalorian and Watchmen, and I was like, can we re-record my part where I said what the number one show was, because I want to change it. The Mandalorian is fantastic. The end of it was amazing. And I have to say, there's definitely someone who I'm not going to name until we get to spoiler parts, but there is someone out there in the industry right now who helped the end of this series get a big bang, and he is killing it on a lot of different shows, and he's making a lot of money, and he is like the number one character actor for like 2019, I gotta say.
That's Taika Waititi you're talking about?
Gus? Isn't that his name? I don't know.
Oh, you're talking about Giancarlo Esposito. Okay.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Like, yeah, yeah, the chicken polo.
Okay, well, when you said that, I assumed you were talking about Taika Waititi, because he played IG, is it IG-11? The nurse,
oh,
the nurse droid? But he also plays the rock guy in Thor Ragnarok in Endgame. And he's also the director of Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, I was about to say, you mean the director guy? Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. No, I meant the chicken polo.
Okay, cool, cool. All right, Kev, Mandalorian, what are your thoughts?
So, sorry. So good.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we are all looking forward to it, but it is far better than it had any right to be.
Mm-hmm.
Loads of fun. Releasing that episode 7 on a Wednesday before Skywalker and having 10 days to go, oh my God, how are they getting out of this, was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, because Lucas said for the first Star Wars, how much was influenced by the old movie serials.
Mm-hmm.
And every 10, 15 minutes, you need to have some cliffhanger, some drama, something. And Mandalorian is the first time in a long time I felt that. Yep. Way. Like, oh my gosh, I need more. Oh, what's going to happen? Oh, how are they getting out of this? How is he going to solve this? And everything made sense, too. There wasn't anything they thought that was freaking stupid and ridiculous and out of nowhere. Here's some foreshadowing. It's going to pay off, and you're going to be satisfied with how we get out of this one. Here's a character that we're not going to mention, so you forget about them, so then when they show up as help, out of nowhere, you're like, oh my God, I forgot you were here.
Yep. A lot of payoffs.
Ridiculously well done.
Yep.
Even if that was it, I'd be happy. Knowing there's a season 2 coming, I'm like sold. There's so much you can do. And there's not. We got a Jedi tease, or, you know, Sith, or whatever you want to call it. But there's no Skywalker. There's no one really familiar. There's echoes of familiar, the Mandalorian armor, Baby Yoda, you know, yes. But this is new, and this is everything that Star Wars should be. Hey, we have a whole galaxy of stories here.
Mm-hmm.
Not everything involves around this family. There's a lot we can do. Let's explore. Let's have fun.
Yep.
And so everything feels like anything could happen. You know certain people aren't going to die, or if they die, they're going to come back from the Force, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know certain people aren't going to die in the movies. The Mandalorian feels completely open and unpredictable, and that makes it exciting to watch. I don't want any spoilers. I don't want to know anything. If I see it, either of you post something, I haven't watched it yet, like I'm ignoring your post. Mm-hmm. I'm off social media until I can watch it. And it's been a long time since I've had a show like that.
Yep.
Or anything like that.
Welcome to my world. That's how you feel about everything if you ignore everything about everything.
Well, this show and Watchmen, the fact that they ran concurrently is amazing, because Watchmen also had that similar experience where I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know what to expect, and both shows completely defied my expectations in a very good way. Like
I'm still confused about that show.
We'll talk.
Oh, we can talk about that later.
We'll talk, Rich. We should do a Watchmen episode. We should. Because, like, for me, not to go off on a tangent, but I just read the Watchmen graphic novel for the first time. I don't know. It was like a couple weeks ago I finished it. And, Kev, I'm sure you've read it before. I don't know if did you watch the HBO series at all?
No. I don't have HBO, and I didn't feel comfortable getting a whole series and however many gigs that would have been.
Mm.
And staying off radar.
Wait, so you haven't seen it?
No.
But anyway, sometime in the future, we'll do a Watchmen episode.
No, I need to. I will.
Yeah, sometime in the future. No rush. But yeah, we could talk about the graphic novel, and yeah, there's so much we could talk. But anyway, Watchmen, yeah, both The Mandalorian and Watchmen defied my expectations in very good ways. Like this one, like to be honest, when Disney Plus came out, I was kind of disappointed in the fact that I was hoping they would have a Marvel series to kick it off. Like, I was hoping we would get Falcon and the Winter Soldier or whatever, right? So having The Mandalorian, I was like, okay, well, it's Star Wars. Of course I'm going to check it out. Like, it's, you know, like, I kind of read about it a little bit. It's a show about a bounty hunter and so on. So that's what I was expecting. We're going to see this guy. He's going to go collect bounties. That's going to be, you know, the way the episodes end. And then, yeah, having the Baby Yoda reveal completely took me by surprise. And then it being a show about him protecting this, you know, for like, you know, the child, that, you know, we're supposed to call him. We're not supposed to call him Baby Yoda, but I do. I didn't see that coming. And brilliant. Brilliant that they did that. Like, I know there was a video where on YouTube where someone posted about how they figured Disney lost a bunch of money because they didn't have Baby Yoda merchandise for Christmas. But like Jon Favreau said, like, that was a decision we made and Disney agreed with us because we did not want to, because if we had been making Baby Yoda toys, word would have got out. Like, hey, you know, there's a little Yoda in this new show, you know. And
well, they did have the pre-orders out for Christmas, so you could order it for Christmas and get it by June.
Yeah, after The Mandalorian was already released. So, like, it was brilliant that they did it that way. Completely defied my expectations. So let's get into some specifics. I mean, there was a few episodes that were like, eh, like the whole heist episode where they rescued that guy with a tentacle head. You know, I could have done without that one. The one on Tatooine, I actually didn't mind. I thought that was a lot of fun to see them back at Mos Eisley and stuff. And to see that droids are now allowed in the cantina, like droids are not being discriminated against now. Great finale. Like, oh my God, that was such a good finale. And like you said, Kev, the, you know, episode 7, having to wait that long, like, it was tough. It was definitely tough. And what an entrance. Like, Moff Gideon is so fucking cool. Like, you know, it's too bad they didn't have a villain like this in the Rise of Skywalker running things.
Not only what a great entrance, but what a great build-up for him. Mm-hmm. Off camera in your speeder bike, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern waiting for him to show up. Mm-hmm. Where they're just sitting there talking, bullshitting, smacking around Baby Yoda, missing their hitting a target that's like 2 feet away from them. And then, he just killed the guy, so you guys might want to wait a little longer. Freaking fantastic.
I thought that was actually an SNL skit when I read online that, like, Jason Sudeikis or whoever was like punching Yoda, and like I watched a clip of it on Twitter and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the only funny thing that SNL has done in like 30 fucking years. And then I watched the episode and I was like, this is eerily similar to the SNL skit they did. Like, I didn't think they were allowed to do that. And then I was like, wait a second, I don't think that was an SNL skit.
Well, that, and when IG-11 shows up, I'm like, what? Like, it was cool. So it was like, where the hell did this guy come from? Like, but I don't need to know how he got there so fast, but it was cool because it's like they sped off on speeder bikes, then they stopped and they're waiting to get the clearance, right? So they're killing time. So IG-11 must have been running like the whole time from Mando's ship to there. And then he just shows up. Hey, you know, I'm going to have to take that child from you. I'm going to have to ask you to stop hitting it now.
Taking one of the dumbest looking droid designs from the old toys, the old mm-hmm. Kenner toys, and then making it entirely believable and badass.
Yeah, well, you say dumb, but I always thought he kind of was cool. Like when they had like the bounty hunter lineup on Vader's Star Destroyer, I was like, I want to see that thing like do something. Like I was
that's what I mean. It was like, how does this work? How would this work as a bounty hunter?
Yeah,
I don't understand how this thing would move. Yeah. And then they answered that
in a cool way.
Full.
Yeah.
This works. This makes sense.
Like on the first episode, like it was awesome. I was like, holy shit. Seeing it kick ass with Mando, and then Mando shooting in the head. And then I love the fact they brought him back and having him relearn things, and he was reprogrammed. And I love the parallel between the story of, I keep saying IG-11 or whatever the droid's name is, and Mando, you know, how they changed. Right. I love that. But yeah, like, but I can't understate how awesome the Moff Gideon entrance was. Like, that was like to see him fly in on and land a TIE fighter and then get out of it, like, was like the badass, one of the most badass moments ever on television. Like, it was so cool. And then he continued in this episode. You know, see, well, like when Mando took out the TIE fighter, like that was awesome. And then the Darksaber reveal.
Oh my gosh. Like, I didn't see it coming. I didn't have a clue.
Like my jaw literally dropped when I saw that. I'm like, oh my God, he has the Darksaber. Yeah, which, I mean, if you watch Clone Wars or Star Wars Rebels, the Darksaber plays a big part in the, you know, in Mandalorian culture. And I'm kind of interested to see, you know, if for the next season, if they do a backstory of Moff Gideon, like him destroying Mandalore and taking it. Because the leader of the Mandalorians is supposed to have the Darksaber, right? Like, that was... It was a Mandalorian who became a Jedi, and he created the Darksaber, and then when he died, or no, I think when the Jedi fell, the Mandalorians took it back, and then basically that was like, basically it's like a crown, right? Like whoever has the Darksaber is the head of the Mandalorians, and then obviously he killed that person and took it from them. Who, in Rebels, which I'm hoping they cast her. Do you guys remember Katie Sackhoff? She played Starbuck on the new Battlestar Galactica. She plays that character who takes the Darksaber in Rebels and was the leader of the Mandalorians at the end of that series. So I would love it if they did an episode where they show a flashback of Moff Gideon sacking Mandalore and killing, and actually have Katie Sackhoff play that character. Like, that would be so fucking cool. Excuse my friend.
She'd probably do it too.
Oh yeah, like she's up for geeky stuff. She's pretty cool that way. I've said it before, Baby Yoda, best new character I never knew I needed in my life. So awesome.
I was really impressed with Gina Carano.
Oh yes, man, was she awesome.
She's come a long way from Crush on American Gladiators.
And she was the one that was in the first Deadpool, right? Like, she was, I can't remember her character's name.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. I figured that was her. It's been a few years since I watched Deadpool, but
who are we talking about?
The lady bounty.
Well, the shock trooper.
Shock trooper, yeah.
Oh, she's so hot. Oh my God, I want her to shock troop me.
And according
Rich, have you ever seen her in American Gladiators?
No, I don't think so. I don't watch American Gladiators. I watch Canadian Gladiators, which is just a bunch of guys with hockey sticks
drinking beer and eating donuts.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it's on Hulu still. It was like, oh my gosh, 10-15 years ago they did a reboot of it, but she's on there and her gladiator name is Crush.
Oh, good.
You name. Act like we have Hulu in Canada.
Oh yeah, we definitely don't got Hulu. But we might be able to catch it on YouTube. Yeah,
that's
true.
They don't or a clip
have,
of it.
They don't let us have nice things in Canada like Hulu. but yeah, like she was awesome. According to our friend Eric Johnson, who may be or may not be listening to this episode because I know he does listen, she apparently was a contender for the role of Wonder Woman.
There's a push to have her be She-Hulk right now.
She would be amazing as She-Hulk.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Gal Gadot, don't get me wrong. Like I think they did cast her right, but if she weren't in the picture, I would definitely take Carla? Is that her name?
Crush.
I would definitely take her as Wonder Woman cuz she's beautiful, she's amazing. And have you guys seen that clip? I want to say it was from New York Comic Con. They did a Mandalorian panel, right? And I got to say, I love Pedro Pascal, who's the Mandalorian. He's awesome. Like it's amazing.
You guys got to stop using actors' names and use character names here for me.
So he's the Mandalorian. He was also Prince Oberyn in Game of Thrones. He's the guy that gets his head literally smashed open.
Have to say, I was actually kind of disappointed at the reveal. He seemed
normal.
Yeah, I was really expecting like I don't know, like fucking somebody way hotter or something. Like he didn't seem sexy enough to be like the main lead of the show. Or, well, and also, he didn't seem ugly enough to have a mask on the whole time. I was just like, he's just too normal.
Have you seen him on Game of Thrones?
No, I don't watch Game of Thrones. Okay. I'm a good person.
YouTube the Pedro Pascal Prince Oberyn scenes from Game of Thrones. He'll sex it up for you. Don't worry. He gets very sexy on that show. Anyway, but no, I think he's fantastic. Like so many actors, and this is like Carl Urban's the only other actor I can think of that sticks to the mask. Like Carl Urban when he did Dredd, he never took the mask off ever, which Dredd never does in the comic book. So the Mandalorian, you know, like the you know. Apparently it's a code now that Mandalorians can't take their helmets off, which, like in Clone Wars and Rebels, they used to take their helmets off all the time. I'm assuming it must be an Empire thing, like so the Empire can't get their identities. That must have came into effect after Rebels. But the fact that he keeps his helmet on for the whole series, but yet is able to convey so much emotion and, you know, And you kind of know what he's thinking without him saying anything. You know, like, I love that in this final episode when IG-11 or IG-18, whatever his name is, points out that, that he, you know, telling him you don't have to be sad. And he's like, I'm not sad. He's like, yes, you are. I can hear it in your voice. I'm a nurse droid.
Like when, it's almost like we're ready as a society to have movies without humans or without faces. Like maybe, I don't know, a Transformers movie without a fucking human in it.
Do they have humans in Transformers? Oh, you're talking about just straight up Transformers. Oh, no sidekicks.
No, but it's just like every time they make a movie that is about aliens or robots or something that isn't human, they have to put humans in it so that we can, you know, feel or some shit. Well, it's like, no, we don't, just make the characters good and we'll feel for the character. They don't have to be human for us to feel human empathy towards them.
Well, and what I'm referring to is like, say, take Spider-Man, for example. Tom Holland and, you know, Tobey Maguire, whoever's playing Spider-Man, they do the worst job at maintaining a secret identity, because he's always taking his mask off because they need to see the actor's faces, right? He has to be seen. He had to convey the emotion.
Talk about the DC Arrowverse.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, it's just terrible. But
like fucking Flash.
But oh my god. But Pedro Pascal is able to do so much wearing that mask, and it works. Like it's truly a testament to his acting. Like absolutely amazing. But anyway, I was talking about this clip from New York Comic Con. I think it's New York Comic Con. Where it's a Mandalorian panel, right? And he's talking about he was brought in because they wanted to cast him in the show. So he was brought in for a meeting with Jon Favreau and Dan Filoni?
He wore a helmet.
Dan Filoni?
He wore a helmet.
No. But anyway, the showrunners of The Mandalorian, he was brought in and they're showing them all basically, you know how the episodes end with those storyboards and you like, it's like the painted storyboards where as they're rolling the credits, you see all those. That's basically what they had in their office, right? They had all these storyboards, like we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And we want to cast you in the show. And he's like, oh, this is awesome. He's looking at it and he's like, okay, so what do I play? Do you want me to be the robot guy? And they're like, no, we want you to be the Mandalorian. And he literally starts crying at the panel. Like he starts tearing up. Like because he is such a Star Wars fan, and he grew up like us watching Star Wars. He couldn't believe that they would want him to play the lead. Like he assumed that he was being brought in to play like a bug or something, right? And he was just blown away that he was asked to play the lead. And yeah, he starts tearing up, and what's her name? Crush is beside him. She's like, you know, like it's a very touching moment. And it shows just how much he loves this show and how much he loves that character. And yeah, I'm very happy that he is the Mandalorian. But yeah, going into season two, I'm looking forward to uncovering more lore of the Mandalorians. Like I said, I would love a flashback episode of Moff Gideon and how he got the Darksaber. You know, maybe we'll see some more of the Mandalorians. Because some of them may have escaped.
It'd be really funny if you got that backstory episode of how he got the sword, and it's just an episode where he goes to like a pawn shop, like, you know, Galaxy Pawn Stars or something, and just picks it up, and he's like, oh, that's kind of nice.
No, there's no way Moff Gideon just got that at a pawn shop. He definitely kicked some ass for that Darksaber. Guaranteed. And then I'm still holding on. Okay, so the Tatooine episode, remember they killed off What's-Her-Name from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? And then the episode ends with, you see
her... Who came upon her body?
Yes. Supposedly, John Favreau said, oh, that was Moff Gideon. But I don't think it was. Because when he's walking up, you can hear spurs. From cowboy boot spurs, right? You hear the spurs move as he's walking towards the body, right? And you got the cape. And that's all you see. But when Moff Gideon gets down from his TIE fighter and he's walking, and you see him walking, you don't hear spurs because he doesn't have them. So I really don't think that was Moff Gideon. I think that was Boba Fett. And the reason why I say
he probably just traded them at the pawn shop for the blade.
Well, the reason why I say it's Boba Fett is because I didn't even realize this. In all the years that I watched The Empire Strikes Back, I didn't pick up on this. Boba Fett wears spurs on his boots, and you totally hear them when he walks. The scene where. You know, the Vader reveal where the door is open and Vader's at the end of the table. Han shoots at Vader and then Vader grabs his blaster. And then Boba Fett walks out from behind the curtain. You can hear the spur. Yeah. You can hear the spurs in that scene. So it's the spurs, man. The spurs.
Oh.
I think Boba Fett is alive. Well, they've kind of established... that Boba Fett did survive the Sarlacc and that he is out there somewhere. And it totally makes sense since the Sarlacc was on Tatooine. He might still be kicking around on Tatooine. And maybe now he's on the hunt for the Mandalorian, right? Maybe it will be Moff Gideon will put the word out that he wants the Mandalorian and Boba Fett will show up just like he did for Vader.
Mm-hmm.
But... Huh. Anyway, that's my fan theory. That's my fan theory. So, gentlemen, any other final thoughts or words on The Mandalorian before we call it an episode? All right.
I can't wait for more.
Yeah, me too.
Bring in season two.
Just real quick, I just saw this. I totally forgot to mention this when we were talking about Rise of Skywalker. I don't know if you guys are fans of Doctor Who, but my favorite Doctor in Doctor Who was played by Matt Smith. Supposedly he was supposed to be in The Rise of Skywalker. He would there was a lot of theories that he was going to play like a clone of the Emperor, that he was going to be like the young version of the Emperor, and he was not in this movie at all. And apparently he's been dropped from the. Apparently he did film some stuff for the movie. But it was never used, and he's not even in, like, the IMDb listing anymore. Like, I guess they removed him from the film.
Hmm.
So...
I thought he played Snoke. No makeup or anything. I thought that was him. Was that not him?
No. No.
I don't know.
But, yeah, like, being a Doctor Who fan, I was like, at the end of the movie, I was like, hey, where was Matt Smith? What happened to that guy? But, anyway, it's unfortunate. So let's call it an episode, and let's get to that little segment that we call Where Can We Find You? Rich, if I wanted to look you up on the internet, where would I find you, sir?
Well, you can find me here occasionally. Other than that, you can, I guess, find me on Twitter, at Reesh613, or on Instagram, at Reesh613. That's kind of just how you search me up anywhere. at RICHE613. That's kind of my my name pretty much everywhere I go. So there you go.
Excellent. Kev, where can we find you, sir?
You can find me all over your usual social medias and at my blog at Masked Library. And you'll know it's me when you see the superhero mask covering a VHS.
Excellent. And you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ChrisLock1701. I do a blog. It's called Random Nerdness. You can check that out at randomnerdness.blogspot.com. So I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to download and or listen to this podcast. We appreciate any feedback you can give us. Please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or at podbean.com. We'd also like to hear from you. If you want to send an email, I'm at chrislock1701@yahoo.ca. And be sure to check out our group on Facebook. We are the Pop Culture Pub and Podcast. That is our group on Facebook. I also am the admin of the Incredible Fans of the Incredible Hulk group on Facebook. All right, so on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, and Mr. Kevin Decent, and Mr. Richard Reeder, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to us talk about The Rise of Skywalker and The Mandalorian. And we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.
Sure. Oh.